Hello, and welcome to Androids and Assets. I'm Steven.
And I'm Marshall.
And this is the show where we discuss the political economy of science fiction and fantasy. That is, how decisions are made, how wealth is distributed, and how war... war never changes.
We are talking about Amazon's newest sci-fi blockbuster, The Tomorrow War, directed by Chris McKay, and written by Zach Dean, starring Chris Pratt and Yvonne Strahovski. Steven, I'm gonna give you the honor of summarizing this movie. Good luck.
Wow, what an honor. All right, so Dan Forrester is your average, amazing dad slash super buff former special operations officer turned high school biology teacher. You know, the kind we all know. His wife and child love him. He has a beautiful home. But he's trying to get his dream job, which is working in a laboratory. But sadly, he lacks the private sector experience to get his foot in the door. But on the same day that he loses his dream job, the world changes. Because you see Time Marines. They're cool as hell. And they like jump out in the middle of, like, I guess, like a World Cup soccer game. Which is cool, I guess. And they demand conscripts from the past be sent to the future to assist a beleaguered humanity against aliens. And for reasons that are not clear in any way,
not at all,
they agree. The world agrees.
You,
or at least the United
us,
States.
So you need to fight our war.
Yeah. Therefore, the United States is like, a war? Hell yeah. I don't know about other countries, but certainly the U.S. does. Yeah. Yeah. So it turns out this war is going real bad. And the people that get sent to fight in the future, like, have an 80% casualty rate.
Phenomenally high.
Which is, whew, and we'll get into that later. People really don't want to go because getting drafted is ostensibly a death sentence. And several months into the war, Dan is drafted. We find out how, there's like some ambiguity about the criteria for drafting, but we ultimately find out it's because they are only drafting people who will die before the invasion is expected to start so as to avoid paradox, right?
Yeah, or who are dead at least by the time that they're sending them. So if somebody, yeah, like, they have to die within the next 30 years before, you know.
Sure, yeah, because paradox.
I guess it's because they don't want to meet themselves.
I guess. I don't know why that's a problem, because there's lots of paradox-inducing things that happen, but...
yeah, and also, so like, and they say the future population is down to 500,000.
Oh, so that's just everybody then.
Like, everybody should...
So just, I don't just understand. Everybody's
so,
dead,
so maybe that's not
man.
The right criteria. I don't. So I don't know exactly what the criteria is.
Well, I think but. I thought actually that it was to like take people who died before the invasion is expected to start, so they wouldn't at all diminish the posture of the standing force at the time of the war being expected to start on Dan Earth. We're going to call one Dan Earth, and we're going to call one
Future Earth.
Future Earth. Yeah. Oh, past Earth and future Earth. That's much better. Yeah. I was going to.
Dan Earth and Miri Earth?
Dan Earth and. That's what I was going to do, but I think past Earth and future Earth is better.
Anyway, yes, it's bizarre. He goes in to get conscripted, or he goes in for an interview with them, and they don't answer any questions. They just tell him to sit in this chair with his shirt off so you can see how buff he is.
So hot.
They strap him in, put his arm in a machine, and tell him to bite down on some plastic thing, which he refuses to do because he's a very strong man. And then they surgically attach a clock or a watch.
A very big high-tech watch. Unergonomic Fitbit.
onto his forearm. And it's an extremely painful process because it looks like they put like pins or needles or drills and screws or something into your bones to prevent you from removing this thing. It was wild.
Yeah.
And he didn't pass out.
Dan doesn't want to go, and he's like, I need to get out of this. Fortunately, there's only one man on Earth who can crack the security on this device, and he just happens to be my estranged father. Coincidentally. So he goes to see his libertarian MacGyver father, who's also a Vietnam veteran, which I think we got to be getting to the end of the Vietnam veterans. like it's it's time is just going to retire that trope. Like, we got to get some. He could have been in Desert Storm, you know? Like,
yeah.
Like, who plays the dad again?
J.K. Simmons.
J.K.
I think he did need to be Vietnam. Or, you know, maybe they could have done
He definitely could have been Iraq. Because, especially if you were like career military, like, you could have gone.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah, he could have been a little bit older when he went.
Yeah, that also plays then for having like more experience, having seen some stuff, having not that like I guess when you're young, but like to have actually participated in the entirety of the war versus if you're like a supposedly Vietnam vet, you were like extremely young and only at the end.
Yeah, yeah, because like Vietnam ended in what, like 74 or something.
Yeah.
So if you were 20 when it ended, like you got drafted when you were 18, mm-hmm. you did 2 years or something, and then you were 20 when it ended.
You're 70 now.
Yeah, then it's like 50 years, and you've got to be 70.
Yeah.
And J.K. Simmons looks old, but I don't know that I buy 70. Anyway.
Yeah, so anyway, we're getting just time. We're just getting to the end of Vietnam-based characters, and we're going to talk more about why that's significant. I think that's quite meaningful. But anyway, so he goes and sees his dad to remove the Fitbit, and they have a big fight, and then Dan says, fine, I would rather die than have a civil conversation with you, and he leaves healthy. And then, you know, Dan goes back home, he has a touching farewell of his daughter, he's digging a hole. And he, like, severs a fiber optic cable, presumably knocking out the neighborhood's internet. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you're going to tell your mom you did this. So it's nice, you know. And just goes to show, intimacy is rooted in mutual transgression. Anyway, then he goes off to the drafting center, and he has a day camp of training. This is a gun. And there's like, I'm an accountant.
Yeah, there's like, there's people wearing like a pantsuit and...
Yeah, like, that seems fine for combat.
Throw a pair of high heels on there, you're good to go. Yeah.
This is what tells me I don't think they had very much military... Well, I don't actually know much military the assistance they had, but they're very much like, just like, they're not... You know why they have an 80% casualty rate, because they're like, here's a gun, goodbye.
Well, and we were told that he was supposed to have... they would have 8 days... before they would teleport to the future.
Yeah, insert.
But something happened, and they had to go 7 days early.
Right.
So they were supposed to have a one-week boot camp.
Oh, okay.
Which is, you know, infinitely better than a one-day boot camp.
That is true, yeah.
But in no way sufficient.
Yeah, so Chris Pratt is luckily a veteran military officer. So he's, like, telling the people around him how to, like, put bullets in their guns and things like that. Things, you know, that he's... So that's good. And anyway, everything goes... He meets a crew of oddballs. There's some guys and a woman. And then they go into... And then they're dropped into battle. And it's a shitstorm because they just get dropped out of the sky over Miami. And if this movie were... really realistic, everyone would have died. But Chris Pratt lands in a pool, I guess.
Yeah.
Sure.
He lands in a pool. So yeah. I was doing a little bit of reading about this, and I don't know how far or how long he fell. But for a person around Chris Pratt's size,
yeah,
they figure terminal velocity into a body of water, you have to fall for about 14 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a pretty long time to be falling.
Yeah.
I don't know that he was falling for that long.
Yeah. I don't know. We have to have someone time it, I guess. We didn't have the gumption. Yeah.
So I don't know if he would die, but I still like falling into a body of water. Water is dense and you know.
Let's just put it this way. He's falling for more than 7 seconds.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, we know, and I think what the reading says that terminal velocity into a body of water would be lethal. I don't know if, like, lethality would occur prior to terminal velocity. you said he would die if he hit a body of water at terminal velocity.
Yeah.
But I think he would also die if he hit a body of water at some point prior to attaining terminal velocity.
Oh.
So even if he doesn't falling for the whole seconds, like we can say he fell for 7 seconds.
Right.
So.
I wonder if it's maybe not terminal velocity. Well, maybe, I don't know. I can't remember now.
Right. I mean, terminal velocity is fast. Yeah. Well, the speed of gravity. Yeah. So.
Well, anyway.
Yeah. I guess that's drag.
The maximum speed a person can achieve under gravity's acceleration.
Under gravity acceleration, yeah. And then, I mean, less drag and so on. It's more complicated because there's friction in the atmosphere. But anyway.
Because remember, kids, gravity isn't a speed. It's an acceleration.
Yeah, and I guess it, body positioning. But he does, like, decrease his profile. Anyway.
Which only makes him go faster.
Physicists have a ball. So one thing leads to another. Dan proves his combat acumen, and he finds himself under the command of a Colonel Forrester, who turns out to be his daughter, Miri. Dan finds that in this world, he abandoned his daughter after his tour of duty and then died in a car accident shortly thereafter. Father and daughter science ensues. They go and they collect a queen or like a female of the alien species that are called White Spikes. And then they are like, there's a big lab montage and they're like, oh, trying to science this to find out about these creatures. And they find a poison that works on them.
We're joined now by our science expert, Candace. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. We really appreciate this. There is, in the Tomorrow War, a fabulous little section in the middle where they do science in a lab on a monster.
Those are my favorite scenes in movies.
I mean,
any movie that has a science lab scene is okay by me. And usually, like, wildly inaccurate.
made the movie worth watching.
Yes, just that scene. No idea what they were doing, but...
Well, because this is what I was going to ask you. Is like you said, they're normally wildly inaccurate. Was this inaccurate?
Okay, well, I should preface this with, I don't work in the type of lab that does... the work that they claim to be doing.
So what work were they
doing? Okay. So from what I understand, the female of this species has an enzyme that degrades the toxin more really quickly. And so she has been kind of immune to it. Right.
Yep.
So what they're trying to find is some kind of blocker for that enzyme. So an enzyme is basically like molecular scissors. It's something that like comes in and cuts stuff up.
Okay.
And if you find something the right, like basically all enzymes work on, they're specific to certain molecules or certain shapes. So they have like a, think of it as kind of like a Pac-Man. They have a mouth that chomps onto things. In a certain to specific molecules in a certain way, and then they have a process by which they break them up, like slice them
sure
in whatever way. We don't need to go into the details of that. So if you're working on like a blocker for an enzyme, it would be something that had either something that inhibited the production of that enzyme, like blocking it at a production level, so that would be something that interacts with like the DNA or mRNA, or it would be something that fits in that mouth space that is not cuttable by the enzyme because of the structure. So it has a similar shape, but the bonding structure is different, and it's not possible for them to like cut to break it down.
Right. Yeah.
So right now we have amazing computers that will, if they know the enzyme, then they know the sequence of it, they know the structure of it, then they should be able to just like using a computer reverse engineer something that fits in there.
Right.
That kind of fits the criteria. They might have to try a few things, but they should be able to be really close very quickly. But in this, they were I don't know how they were trying to find a blocker. It was like they just took a sample of everything in the environment. And they were like, does this block it? Does this block? And they just put them in hundreds of test tubes, like little wells in in these plates, in these analysis plates. And we're testing each one. It was like, this one is 70% effective. This one is 30%. And I'm like, why would you, where did you get these? Just do it in a computer. And everything should be pretty good. Like, you might have a
narrow
it
down
a
to like the
duds,
top 10 or something.
But
and...
yeah, like you should be able to. I mean, really, the first one you make should be pretty accurate.
Right. Yeah, know? Yeah.
We have the technology.
And especially 30 years in the future, you'd think it would only get better.
It should. Yeah.
Yeah. But otherwise, like seeing them doing the science, like it looked. It looked like they were doing science well.
They were pipetting. That's a real thing. That
recognizable
is done
science
in many science labs. Yeah, and initially I was frustrated with the way they were like filling their multi-well plates, but once I realized that each well was its own individual sample,
right.
I realized they had to do them like they were single pipetting into each well, which I'm also. Not sure you would. I don't know. I have
what,
not.
Because
I
what like were the, they putting in the wells then?
They were
because they were
in
immediately taking them back
molecule.
Out to put it on a sample plate, right?
Yeah. So they had one well for each whatever they were testing as an inhibitor. But usually those wells are used for like serial dilutions. Like I've never seen them used where you put an individual thing in each well, just because. There's it's a much higher risk of contamination.
Sure.
So what you would want is just the same thing, and then you have different dilution values of it.
Right.
It's like a dilution gradient.
So you're testing one chemical or whatever.
Yeah.
At different strengths.
Exactly. Yeah. Or that would be, I mean... I'm trying to remember now because I did work with those and if I individually pipetted different things. But again, it would never be different things in each individual well. It would be like in this row.
Right,
you know,
right,
like,
right, right.
It would be like across the row. Yeah, no. It didn't make sense to me. Because like even in like a medical lab, you put every sample has its own vial because that prevents... cross-contamination.
Right.
And then when it goes into the machine, each one gets poked, you know? Like,
sure. And that makes sense.
Yeah. So they pipetted. Good.
Good.
And they had a computer.
The computer spoke to them out loud. That was
yes.
Fun.
Yeah. And it gave them information that was what, like how effective the bond was.
That's the crucial information you need read out to you by a computer, though.
Yeah. But they didn't bother to use the computer to just design the actual molecule that would have helped them.
Yeah.
When
you...
Also, if they were doing it that way, there's no way they would have found it within a day, something
that's
like 90% effective. Like, I didn't understand. It was a miracle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything was a miracle.
Legitimate miracle. Yeah. when you worked in a lab... Did most of your breakthroughs and solutions happen immediately after you had like an emotional connection and an emotional breakthrough in your personal life?
What a good question. Yes. Yeah. No.
We know that's how science works.
Yeah. No, they're kind of out of the blue.
It was amazing because... Chris Pratt and Yvonne Strahovski had a heartfelt conversation, and immediately upon reaching a resolution where they were like, we both understand the outcome of this, the computer said 100% bond.
Yeah, and also 100% bond is like insane. And just, like, don't think. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would happen, like to be completely. I mean, maybe if you had something designed in a computer, but again, not if you're just like picking random things from the environment.
Unless it was that very...
The thing that it already breaks down.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a touching moment, though, when you hear 100% bond between a mother, a father and daughter.
Yeah. Is it about the enzyme or is it about them?
We'll never know.
Yeah. the spiritual manifests in the physical.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So when are you going to watch The Tomorrow War again?
Never. I'm done. I actually, even for movies I like, I don't have a big rewatch.
Yeah.
I don't really do that. So, and for movies I don't really care that much. Not that this was not a great movie. It wasn't. It wasn't a great movie. It was fun to watch it because of how bad it was and how many like inconsistencies there were. That was fun. I do enjoy a bad movie watch, but yeah. Not really a bad movie rewatch.
Fair. Yeah. Fair enough.
Unless it's Kirk Cameron Saving Christmas, then we watch it every year because it's so bad.
There's like two movies that you watch over and over again.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us telling us about science. We always appreciate it.
I hope I didn't misrepresent it too badly.
All of science now.
Is, yeah.
But it's too late because the base is overrun by white spikes, and Dan watches his daughter die as the last human outpost falls to the aliens, effectively ending the Tomorrow War. But Dan is sent back with the chemical weapon, and the sight of his daughter's death burned into his mind.
Well, and also his daughter Miri from the future had brought him with a specific purpose of finding a poison that would work. And sending him back in time,
yeah,
knowing that the war in the future is already like she's like, yeah. We can't win this
to give them a shot in the next war.
Yeah, but like yeah. You can go back in time and solve this, and I need you to do it because you're my dad and you owe me for abandoning me.
Yeah, and I know you'll do this because I guilted you.
Yeah,
but you know Dan, he's not going to take this lying down. He's not just going to content to produce the chemical weapon and wait for the aliens to arise and then. Have the military kill them with the chemical weapon. He's going to go on the hunt. He's going to find them right in their lair. Luckily, he knows a kid who knows a lot about ancient volcanoes, I guess, which is good, which is important. And then they use that to track some dirt on a claw, and they find out where the aliens emerge from. Turns out they landed quite a long time ago and then were trapped under ice.
Yeah, everyone, like in the future, they were like, we never figured out where the aliens came from. We never found a spaceship. We never saw evidence of where Russia. They landed or anything. The first attack happened in Russia. So we assume it was somewhere around there, but we have no idea where they came from. So I can't help you at all.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, they have to go to Russia and they have to find the aliens at the site. They're going to stop it before anything even happens. To do this, they have to violate international law, whatever that means, and fly into Russia without permission. I don't know why that violates. I think that just violates Russian law, but
it's an international felony, though.
But it's an international felony, and there's one guy who loves committing international felonies, whatever those are. Like, I think there are things that go against the International Criminal Code, which I'm not confident this does.
International Criminal Code, famous for banning flight,
banning flight between countries without prior authorization. I mean, who knows? But anyway, it's his dad, his libertarian MacGyver father, who just happens to have a C-130, a Hercules transport aircraft.
Why not?
Sure. So then they
you
go.
Don't?
I do not own a multi-million-dollar military aircraft for recreational purposes.
He gathers up his band.
He's got the team, which is some of the aforementioned oddballs, minus the woman and the fat man. Who had to die for their obvious deficiencies.
Yes. But they nobly sacrificed themselves to allow them to the rest of the team to escape.
Yeah, that's right. And then father and son have an alien fighting action sequence, which they face off with like the queen, and it's dripping in machismo and daddy issues, and what is basically the televisual version of that. Are you winning, son? Meme. Anyway, subsequently, harmony is restored in the entire family system in a Freudian turn, through which reunion with the father heals the primordial psychic wound, and harmony is restored to the universe.
Yeah, I mean, by seeing the conflict with Miri in the future, where he had abandoned her and caused such a wound, he knew that the only way to fix this and to prevent himself from abandoning them was to repair his relationship with his father, which they did by committing murder on aliens.
Yeah. Family movie.
Whatever you got to do, right?
Yeah.
And it's quite comical at the end when, like, father and son are both vying to be the one killed by the queen to save the other. And it's like...
they're both trying to out-Jesus Christ each other.
Yeah. I'll tackle you and leave you in the snow so that I can go and the queen will chase me. No, I'm going to cut my hand so she smells my blood. No, I'm going to drive a skidoo off of a jump and catch her in midair.
You're not the Christ figure. I...
And it all works out together that they're able to, you know, get some venom into her and kill her.
Yeah.
Twice. It's an amazing sequence.
Oh,
probably
yeah.
The best action sequence I have seen to date.
All right. Hot takes tonight. Okay. So are you ready, Marshall, to dive into the private sector experience?
Oh, my God.
With Tomorrow War?
I don't have any private sector experience, so, and I'm not sure that my skills are transferable.
I worked in the non-for-profit sector, but that was private in government, so does that count?
Yes.
Okay.
That's civil society. That's private sector. It counts. Sure.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I do have private sector
transferable
experience.
I mean, I have private sector experience when I was a child and I worked in retail.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Is that transferable?
Maybe. I mean, that is private sector experience. Dan's problem is he went into the military when he was, like, 16, so he never worked, like...
like a good American.
Yeah. Yeah.
my biggest question, both while watching this movie and after it finished and for days later, what even is this movie? You know, like a lot of times you watch a movie and you're like, oh, okay, like here's a message that they have with this. Like here's the story or the allegory or the whatever, you know, here's what the director is trying to say about this. What is this movie? I think ultimately it's a climate change movie.
Okay.
That the white spikes are like a personified fear or danger of climate change, because it happens 30 years in the future and it wipes out humanity. And it spreads across the globe and it's unstoppable and it attacks people like indiscriminately, right? Like it's not like, oh, we only attack a particular race or only poor people or something. It's like, no, everybody. Everybody gets hit.
Some of those good disasters.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are definitely, I can't think of them off the top of my head, but there's some things where it's like, oh, only the poor people get this disease because they can't afford medical care or something.
Like all diseases, you mean?
Well, yes. Like all diseases. But I'm sure there's a movie that has that where it's like...
anyway, and that disease is called Legionnaires.
Hi. So I think it's a climate change movie. It's that in the future, we're all going to die and the decisions are being made by people who don't care because they're not going to be here. And they don't want to change the way that they live because it would be inconvenient for them. And it's young people who are going to the future and making these sacrifices and dealing with the outcome of older people's inaction in the present day. That's why I'm like, okay, I think it's climate change. Yeah.
That is charitable of you. I mean, I think you're right. I think that's what the writers thought they were saying.
And I mean, like they do make it explicit later when they say these aliens landed here on our planet 1,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't make any sense, but they landed 1,000 years ago and then were immediately trapped under ice. Somehow.
Because of that ice age 1,000 years ago. I mean, there was a cool period in the Middle Ages. But
well, yeah, but I mean, like, I don't know. Famously, spaceships, when they crash, are immediately buried in ice. inextricably. Weird to me. Anyway, so this ship is buried under layers of ice, and then when global warming happens, they project, you know, they do a projection and say, okay, 30 years into the future, where this ship is buried will be revealed. Mm-hmm. The ice will have all melted, and now the trapped aliens in that ship will escape.
And yeah, and with that, they're able to calculate where the ship is, or a band along where the ship could be.
Right, yeah. So they say, like, global warming is what ultimately reveals these aliens and causes the problem. If we could prevent global warming now, the white spikes would be trapped in perpetuity, and we would never have to deal with them. Right, so it's global warming that causes, instead of like a slow, gradual, mm-hmm. and then rapid change, it's that it reveals something, and then there's an incredibly rapid and dangerous thing, like an external threat that can be dealt with.
Yeah. By burning fossil fuels.
Well, yeah. Do you have a different solution to climate change? It's also an alien threat movie. And alien threat movies, I don't know, they always make me a little bit uncomfortable because I'm never sure. When you have these aliens that come in and are dangerous and are threatening, that's what makes me uncomfortable. Other alien movies, you can do it well. Like, there's some like District 9 type things where you're like,
yeah, where the aliens show up and then we oppress them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I think far more likely. But yeah, when you're like, oh, these aliens, they're so dangerous and they're so different from us, and like, look at them. They're just gonna kill us. They're gonna come in, they're gonna take your jobs.
By killing you, so you can't do your job.
I'm like, yeah. It feels like there's like a specific message there.
There's a strong historical connection to xenophobia.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's also a story about like the importance of family and relationships. And that, you know, if you can heal yourself, you can heal the world. I don't know. Whatever. Maybe that's true.
Well, it's interesting.
Hurt people, I guess. So,
well, I mean, the big part of this is like the notion. I mean, it's not just like taking care of the family or being well. It's that the presence of the patriarch in the home restores well-being, right? Fathers in the home matter, and the loss and the lack of a father in a home is a problem, and that has baggage. That's a concept.
Yes. Does it ever? Oh,
and not that I mean people, you know, I'm a father. I want to be in my children's life. I don't think it's essential. I don't think, like, there's no cosmic law that says thou shalt have a mommy and a daddy. Right? That's
hot takes.
Hot takes.
Yeah. In the end, though, this movie, like, it does just about everything that a sci-fi movie can do, mm-hmm. this movie makes an attempt at.
And a war movie.
Yeah, like it's an action-y war movie, which I mean a lot of sci-fi movies, whatever. We're splitting hairs at this point. If a blockbuster can do it, this movie makes the attempt. But everything is also like boiled down into like a pastiche, right? And you just get like this melting pot of
tropes.
Yeah. All like throughout the movie there was three of us watching it, and we predicted just about every thing, like every plot point and turn we knew was coming because they telegraph it from so far out, and nothing is weird. Anyway, it felt like the writer and the director felt like this was going to be the only movie they ever got to make, so they better do it.
Make all the movies.
Every movie I've ever wanted to make, I better do it now.
Then they were wrong, because they're soliciting for scripts for Tomorrow War 2.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think, obviously, for me, one of the big things about this is war. And because I think there's also, like, a piece about, you know, empire and militarism. Obviously, the climate change stuff is definitely in there. You can't deny it. But I will say that it says, climate change is a problem we're not equipped to face. So what if we pretended climate change was a problem we were equipped to face? Which, oh boy. And also, there's also a historical event that occurred. So this movie is released on July 2nd. So it's obviously trying to cash in on the Independence Day long weekend. Along with Netflix and competing and running head to head with Netflix's signature Independence Day launch, America the Motion Picture. This is Amazon's dueling streaming services. I will say that then on Tuesday, the following Tuesday after the long weekend, which I believe is July 7th.
July 6th is Tuesday, yeah.
Yeah, so on July 6th, that marked the cover of the night surprise withdrawal of the U.S. soldiers and property from Bagram Air Force Base in Afghanistan. Now, the Bagram Air Force Base is the cornerstone of the U.S. occupation, and their decision to abandon it in the middle of the night effectively ended a significant portion of their operational capacity there. They can't really exist nationally in Afghanistan as a force without Bagram Air Force Base. So the decision to abandon it and abandon it like they did essentially kind of indicates that the war is effectively...
It's over.
Over. For now. And then, of course, and then follow that up on Wednesday with Joe Biden, on the 7th Wednesday with Joe Biden saying, we are bringing the boys home, all of them, August, end of August. And which is a revision from the previous timetable of bringing them home on 9/11, 2021. So exactly 20 years to make that. Just had to get to that 20 year point. Anyway, so for whatever reason, I thought that was a bad idea. So what you have is a movie about the existential essentialness of America fighting a war as abroad as you can be. To literally save his own daughter at a time when the United States is facing a pretty considerable humiliation in a war abroad that represented no threat to their own population. And so this is, I think, part of, like, then, like, it's also a piece of cope. And this is why I think it's also important that they make him a Vietnam veteran. Right, and that, you know, and that there's this, like, point about Vietnam and being like, and emphasizing that Vietnam veterans were treated badly, and that war, you know, was handled badly by everyone, and but that it's also a historical humiliation that America has subsequently overcome. and that doesn't happen to us anymore, or to Americans anymore. As it literally is happening again. the war in Afghanistan.
Well, they won that one, so it's completely different.
Well, is lost now. And, you know, when the Taliban will effectively retake in fairly short order, right? That's going to happen post-withdrawal. So, I mean, all this to say is, like, I think there is a peace which the United States, most of its wars, do not threaten any Americans. Or very few Americans, like maybe embassy staff, right? People that the United States puts in other countries are largely the Americans threatened by this, right? Iran has no designs to hurt, to attack the United States, right? Iran wants regional autonomy, and it wants to, you know, and it feels it has its mission to protect its, you know, the co-religionists. In the near abroad, but they really have no agenda to take over or attack the United States.
Yeah, I mean, it gains them nothing, and
yeah, and it's large, and Iran's goals are largely defensive.
Well, I mean, most countries' goals are largely defensive.
Yeah. So the U.S. is like, so you know, so and I think a similar thing with China, right? In the sense that there's this escalation. With China and Russia, but again, like China and Russia have no plans to invade the United States, right? I don't think there's any, I mean, shy of the nuclear deterrence posture, which is a real threat. But the nuclear deterrence posture is not diminished by subsequent aggressions against Russia and China, right? That doesn't make it less likely that bombs will go off.
Yeah.
So all this to say, like, America is not really under any military threat, right? Mm-hmm. You know, most of the United States' threats are internal.
Like Greenpeace.
Yeah, Antifa super soldiers. No, I mean they're you know, either that, but the internal contradictions in the United States would disrupt its capacity
to
function. For good or for ill. Maybe in
so kind of taking your war theme, very early in the movie there's an exposition heavy scene sequence.
Yeah, telling the story through the news.
Yeah, where they skip forward a year after the first appearance from the future. And they say, here's all of the things that we've experienced and learned and everything. So apparently the timeline is such that so shortly after the future soldiers come to past Earth, all of past Earth acknowledges the threat and agrees to send their militaries into the future to fight this war. Which is, to me, just like a phenomenal, like, occurrence to have, right? Every country is just like, yep, we're going to send our soldiers. We're going to stop all the wars that we're fighting now. Agree on, like, global unity. And send our soldiers to the future instead. And only half of the soldiers are actually, they say roughly half of the world's military was able to meet the criteria to insert into the future. And most of them are subsequently killed. And so then they begin a civilian draft. Whatever. a global civilian draft, which is just absolutely wild. But the fact that every country was like, yes, we're going to end all of our wars and send all of our soldiers somewhere else is one, for me, one of the biggest hurdles, like, in the believability of this happening, right? I guess I did get to keep the half their armies, and if everyone got to keep half, then there's really no material change.
Well, and it's also especially frustrating because at the end, like, this is like an international UN effort, and then at the end, they're talking about, we need to take this information about the aliens to the UN, and someone's like, what, so it can stay in committee forever?
Like, yeah.
No, if the UN put this together,
exactly,
this is hands down, clearly they get shit done.
Yeah, it looked like, I was like, oh man, the UN really made things happen quickly. Yeah. In this universe, like a big operation,
but the UN also lacks private sector experience.
That's very true. Actually, I don't know how true that is. There's probably a lot of people with private anyway. That's how you get a job in the UN.
The UN is not a company, and that's its problem.
Right.
Unlike the United
States. If
they had
just incorporated. Because when the soldiers from the future came back, it mm-hmm. was like there was a small squad of them. It looked like, you know, like maybe 20 people or something came through this wormhole. They all spoke English, and they all appeared to be American. I just wonder how many countries around the world would be like, so this is an American, like.
It certainly looks that way because you only ever see America. Well, we'll talk about the countries that are like functioning in this world.
Yeah, apparently, yeah, maybe.
We can get some flags, people.
Woo! It just seems like it's like people would be like, well, this is clearly an American ruse for us to send our armies somewhere, or at least end the wars that we're fighting with the United States right now, mm-hmm. and allow them to achieve global dominance, like, without any bloodshed.
Yeah. Because the truth is, most military presence in the world outside of the U.S. and its allies, exists as deterrence to the U.S.
Yeah.
North Korea maintains an 8 million person standing force under arms solely to fight the U.S. and its proxy, South Korea.
Yeah, they're very afraid that if they reduce that number substantially, they will immediately be invaded.
And they're not wrong.
Probably not.
Right? To think that. So, yeah.
Anyway, so it was just wild to see that, like, within the space of a year, all wars on present Earth, past Earth, what are we calling it, had ended. They had sent half of their militaries into the future to be destroyed. And then they were already sending civilians. Like, that is a phenomenally fast operation. Anyway, it was interesting. It was wild.
I do want to make one war nerd out a little bit here. This is one thing that's just extremely frustrating to me about the White Spikes. They're only an infantry force, right? They don't have aircraft. They don't have artillery. They don't have thermobaric multi-launch rocket systems. the idea that they would lose to these things is kind of crazy because they're very easy to beat tactically, right? You just find where they are, you make a cordon, like you just level an area, and then you just park like your artillery and your long-range weaponry on there, and you just level them when they try to come close, right? Like, this is just a very, militarily, this is an incredibly soluble problem.
I mean, I'm not a soldier.
Neither am I. It's just like
no, it does seem wild because at some point, like, they send choppers. Was the choppers that had the weapon, or was it the fighter jets, bombers?
Yeah, well, the one they send F-22s to bomb. Yeah, to drop to bomb a section of Miami.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Incredibly precise bombing, by the way. Well done, boys. Yeah,
USAF.
It was incredible. Like the not civilians, the past soldiers who were fighting. You know,
they're bombing. They're dropping strategically dropped 5,000-pound JDAMs,
and the flames stopped just short of destroying
Chris Pratt's beautiful face.
Yeah, it was wild. I tip my hat to you.
Precision munitions.
That's right. Yeah, so they did demonstrate that like dropping a bomb on the White Spikes was enough to kill them. So yeah, you should be able to just drop bombs on them or other. Like, a bullet wasn't big enough to stop them, but you would think like
howitzer would do it.
You would think so. Like, it just put a bigger bullet, and it will eventually, if it doesn't, you know, pierce their skin, it will at least, you know, stop them from moving and maybe push them backward a little bit.
I mean, 50 caliber machine guns seem to work.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
Those are just like, get those, you know, the truck mounted, get your gun truck and
just go around, you know, and shoot them. Anyway, yeah, it was not believable that we would lose to an infantry force with slow guns.
Yeah.
Because they shot spikes, but they couldn't shoot them like rapid fire. It was like they could shoot a spike, and then a while later they could shoot another spike.
Yeah, they had two tails, two barrels, and they had to reload. Reload time was...
I'm very curious about the reloading process as well.
I feel like it kind of undermines... There's no... It, like, it says, what if climate change was something we could fight with our military? You know, which is like...
The funny thing, though, is that they choose that we would still lose.
Yeah, and that. Yeah. Yeah. So it's like... So
just give up on climate change, everybody. It's inevitable.
It's too hard. Yeah, because... Yeah. And so, like, it just, like... Yeah, and it just goes to... It's this whole conflation of the military with, like, solving problems and fixing things and being a science and learning organization as well, right? That the military, you know... Yes, the military carries guns and murders people, but really they're about science.
Well, that's where Chris Pratt got his science
experience.
Yeah,
that's where he got his science experience in an army laboratory. Yeah, so it's like... Yeah, so this idea that the Defense Department of the United States is centrally a learning and a discovering body with a natural curiosity.
I buy it.
Is false. It's fundamentally false.
I'm going to move on to during the news exposition. They showed a screen very briefly that said known casualties, and they listed it by like different countries. And I loved it. In the 1 year of the war, the United States, there's an 80% casualty rate, roughly, of anybody that goes to the future. And the United States had suffered 25 million deaths.
Holy shit.
That's a huge number.
Is that 10%?
Not quite. It's closer to between, like 7%-ish.
7 or 8,
And I was like, wow, that's a big number. And then I saw Canada. Guess Canada's number, Stephen.
15 million.
Wow, it was 11. It was 11 million.
Yeah, which is like
that's still
almost half.
No, it's a quarter.
How many are we at? I thought we were 35 million.
Oh, my God. No. Everybody does this. Okay. You learn demographics in sixth grade and then think the population growth stops.
That's
it doesn't. Canada is over 40 million people now.
Oh, good for us.
I have this conversation all the time. People are like, Canada's only like 33 million people, right? Yeah, 20 years ago. And then guess what? People had babies.
Yeah, and people moved here.
And people moved here because it's not a terrible place for most people to live.
Yeah, and we live.
For some people it is.
And we live and in general, people live a pretty good long time. So.
Yes. Anyway, so it's, but 25% of the Canadian population had died, which either means that there was some other major event that like happened in Canada outside of the White Spikes War, or no, it has to suggest
that. Because only battle casualties.
Only people, well, that's only battle, but this is the thing, right, is that there's a good number of people who wouldn't be old enough to go, mm-hmm. and probably people who would be too old to go. Mm-hmm. And you can only go if you've already died before that time. Mm-hmm. So that means that there's like 15 million Canadians have died before the White Spikes War. What happened in Canada that a third of the population was wiped out before the White Spikes War came? What happened to us?
No, that's true. Well, and also, like, how much of a population is able-bodied adults?
Well, I mean,
typically, it's only like a third, right?
It's probably higher
than
half.
Like,
I mean, like if you looked at like working Canadians,
yeah,
right, we're at like 66% of working of people who are employed and working.
Yeah, but there would be like, I mean, there's no debt. Like, there's no.
So, like, assume 2/3 of the people could go to war.
Yeah,
but then of that 2/3,
a quarter,
you have to have been dead already.
Mm-hmm.
By the time the war started.
Who's going to take care of the children and old people and do all the work and grow the food and stuff?
Well, the children will take care of the old people, and the old people will teach the children. Like, you don't need that middle generation.
Economically, the loss is
phenomenal. And so that's what it got to me, was that this movie is a terribly inefficient use of resources. Right? They came to the past, and rather than saying, hey, in your peacetime, can you take these samples that we provided you and run them through your labs and come up with a solution and then give it back to us?
Mm-hmm.
They said, take all your people who could do this good work, who could, you know, maintain a world, and send them to us instead. And we'll kill them.
We'll drop them over Miami.
We'll run them all through a meat shredder.
Yeah.
And some of them are going to get out, and we'll send them back to you, scarred. Let's try that. It's a hugely inefficient use of resources, and I can't imagine that anybody would have agreed to it if they'd given it, like, any thought whatsoever. You have time travel. At the beginning of the war, you're just like, oh, shit. Well, we captured a couple of the baddies. We're going to send them back in time to you in a cage, and you can do experiments and stuff on them. You can find out what kills them, and then send that information to us. Yeah. And we'll just keep doing this. We'll you know, iterate over the course of the war, and we'll win no problem. We'll even send you all of our future technology.
Yes, right. This is
into the past,
yeah. Which I
we'll give you like
advanced
analytic, you know, like whatever computers and
Our Markavian Eclipse engine.
Yeah, like you know, they've got
or sci-fi tech,
cool things that are going to happen in 30 years. Maybe
time travel, apparently.
Yeah, we got time travel. We'll send that all back to you. That's the other thing, is like they say, oh, our time travel is held together by like chewing gum and toothpicks or something. And why not take that time travel technology and send it to a place that's stable instead of a place that's constantly under attack by an existential threat?
Yeah.
And then that place would turn off the wormhole and leave the future to die. Fuck you. But they would have the time travel technology and it would be safe, right? Like, phenomenally inefficient use of resources.
Yeah. To no effect.
To no effect whatsoever.
Well, and I do also have a thing, like, also, wouldn't you, like, because you're starting, also then you're moving that material into the future.
Yeah.
So, like, you mine iron and copper and things out of the earth to make guns and firearms and munitions.
Yeah.
And then you send that into the future and you deposit that there. And if you give each person, what, like 50 pounds worth of material from Earth, from our planet,
and you don't get it back again.
And you never get it back again millions of times.
Yeah.
I mean, at a certain point, you're like, well, you're robbing the Earth of those resources forever. And
I think the Earth gets them back again in the future.
No, but then the time war doesn't happen. Well, then this is where we get into the paradox problem.
Yeah. Which they try to avoid in the movie very poorly.
Very badly.
And we're like, oh, time is a river, and so we just put two rafts on it. And so we're actually in the same time.
Yeah. But then, river. Yeah, but then Chris Pratt removes the reason for them going back in time in the first place, which nullifies his cause. Like, I mean, it's that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just the very obvious reason why time travel, if it does happen back to front, if we do travel backwards, the reason we never experience it is because it always self-negates.
Right. Yes.
Which is why. So maybe somewhere there is a backwards time machine, but due to its very nature, it just can't.
You can never experience it.
It can never be experienced, yeah. It always collapses itself.
That's funny. Yeah. Anyway, the fact that I think Canada doesn't exist in the future is backed up when we see their, you know, middle of the ocean, supposedly secure facility where the white
their water world.
Yeah. Where was Kevin Costner? He would have saved them.
Just get gills, dummies.
Yeah, they have the secure facility out in the middle of the ocean where they have the time jump facility and they have, you know, their research facility and everything like that, where like all of the important stuff is kept because the white spikes can't swim or something, or just have never demonstrated that they can. We get a shot of flags, and it's a beautiful thing. Just take a moment here. I was very interested to see which flags they chose to show in this, like, you know, future international base effort.
Because I kind the of countries thought, that survive.
Yeah. Well, I was like, okay, so those are like the flags of the G7, right? That would have been my thought when it first happened. I was like, oh yeah, the G7 flags. But then we paused it and we looked at them, and the G7 is the United States, Canada, France, Italy, Germany, Japan, and the UK. Right. Those are the seven largest, roughly, economies, not including like Russia and China.
Yeah, and including the BRICS.
Are not allowed to join because we don't allow them. They're bad. They're some, bad people.
For some reason, maybe the fact that they're not white. I don't.
So, Russians are white.
Are they, Marshall?
I mean, largely. As much as any other country is a single ethnicity.
Racism makes no sense.
The flags that are showing, though, are the United States. Obvs.
Duh.
You're never going to be able to take them down.
No.
Australia. Presumably replacing Canada as a like small Commonwealth country.
I mean, it seems like they would do well in an alien infestation breakout on continental Asia. I would pick them for a winner in that.
Yeah, where you're like, these aliens can't swim. You're like, ha-ha, ka-ching, island nation for the win. The Russian flag was there. No French flag. The Italian flag was gone, but we had South Korea instead.
Cool.
We solved racism in the future. The German flag was still there. The Chinese flag was there.
Hey, hey.
Also important. And the United Kingdom was still there. So so I guess that's the new G7.
It's the new... The top dogs. Woof, woof.
And we know that Canada had some crisis and was completely destroyed, and the territory was just absorbed by the United States. And weirdly, Denmark.
Took me a second. I got our mortal enemies. It's a weird future where we intern all Danish people inside camps in the mountains.
It's interesting though that they chose. I mean, like, I can see why you're like, we're not going to put the Italian flag on there. Who cares?
The pigs countries?
Yeah.
Portugal, Italy, Greece, Spain? Give me the BRICS countries.
Well, you got a couple of them at least.
Brazil, Russia, India.
What? No India, though.
Pigs country? P-I-G-S? Portugal, Italy, Greece, Spain?
I think there's actually two I's.
Oh, okay.
Ireland as well.
Oh, Ireland. Dang.
Yep,
they are fucked. They are fucked badly by the European Union.
They were big growers, and now they're not.
Yeah, well, they succumb to the predatory nature of the European Union.
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, I mean, it was designed that way.
Yep, it was.
Yeah. So interesting selection of flags. I think in the future we know that all of those countries are going to be the ones that thrive. That just makes perfect sense.
Good for South Korea.
I mean, the United Kingdom's also an island nation, so they're good, right? Mm-hmm. United Kingdom is fine. Australia is fine. South Korea should have been in real trouble here.
Yeah, they're right next door.
Like,
yeah,
Siberia, Russia area, right?
So, yeah, Central Asia.
The Koreas would have probably just been one of the first places that would have been overrun.
Luckily, the demilitarized zone.
White spikes respected the demilitarized zone.
UN. I mean, it is a really good place where you could build that cordon I was talking about, where you just level all the trees and then you just put your heavy guns on there.
Maybe that's what they did.
Yeah. Also, it's full of landmines.
Yeah. I guess that means that the Korean War still wasn't solved in the future.
The Korean War was ongoing.
Well, yeah, that's unfortunate.
It's a distinct possibility.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so do you have anything else you want to say about like plot points or like main theme things?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if I had taken more time to really sort out my like. I mean, if I watched it again, I think I'd have like a more salient. But critique. I won't do it. I might have more to say about it, but I think like the big thing for me is that like it tries to tackle like the horrors of war and climate change, but does it in such a way that actually does it so ineptly, as to say nothing about them.
Yeah, they don't take a position on anything
other than just to acknowledge them, which I suppose is a radical position depending on. what dinner That's table true. You visit every, That's true. Every night. And at the end of the day, what really matters is dads being there for their kids.
Yeah.
Which is, again, not a bad thing in and of itself. But it's also not that that gets abused. That's an that's a very abused concept.
Yes. So my overall view is that this is like it's a very nicely produced movie. It has beautiful people in it. It's nice to look at. Like the effects are well done. The aliens are scary.
They're ugly sons of bitches.
Yeah, they're ugly. They take on, you know, a lot of like themes from other aliens we've seen, and I think very effectively. They keep them hidden just well enough for long enough that you're really like, you know, what are these aliens? And then it happens and you're like, wow, they're a dangerous threat, until you stop and let your lizard brain calm down and your human brain thinks about it and you're like, actually, they're nothing.
They're really not that scary. Yeah,
they're not that bad. And that is kind of my whole thing, is that this movie, if you don't think about any part of it, it's fine. Right? It's nice to look at. You can just sit back for 2 hours and 18 minutes and let your brain just shut off entirely, and you could enjoy this movie. But if at any time you begin to think about any aspect of it, we laughed a lot.
Yes,
watching this movie. And I don't think that they were very rarely actually attempting to be humorous.
No.
Like, there was a couple of times where they put jokes in. They have a famous comedy actor in there. But most of the time, they weren't trying to be funny. It was inadvertently funny, and that's a bad thing for this. If you want to find out more about our show and hear about the books and the movies that we're watching, and hopefully they're better than these ones, you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter and Instagram at AssetDroid, and we are have a Facebook page of Androids and Assets, so you can find us there as well. You can also find us on the internet, androidsandassets.ca, and feel free to send us an email, info@androidsandassets.ca.
And so next time you are conscripted to fight a time war in a distant timeline, put us on. It might help you find an optimal placement for your multi-launch rocket system for thermobaric rockets.
Or, alternatively, just write a memo up and say, don't fight the war, send us the info, and I can use my science skills in the past when I'm not being shot at. Just an idea.
That's very, it's very known science, right? Like, what they're doing there, it's...
It was very known science.
It's very known science. Tomorrow War 2 pitches, take one.
You start, because you had a great idea.
Okay, so it's like in the future, they've mastered the time technology, and so Chris Pratt's Earth has become Prime Earth, and they've used the time travel thing to colonize different timelines, Earth at different points in its past, and they have like really advanced technology, and then they kind of like, so they bring people in, and they can like basically harvest new Earths. And this has made Prime Earth extremely rich and powerful, and they kind of do technology transfer, and people send them shit back. Now, this is kind of... However, there's a problem. Some planets, some Earths don't like this. They don't like the relationship with Prime Earth, so they resist it, so then they bar any technology transfer to them. But at the same time, the time travel has created like anomalies on some of these Earths, and then they need the technology to mitigate it. So it's basically the sanctions, the embargoes on the dissenting Earths is killing them. And so, yeah, Chris Pratt is like president of Prime Earth.
President Forrester.
Yeah, President Forrester, and then you have like some like...
Well, like it's far in the future, so it's not Chris Pratt anymore.
Right.
It's like his descendant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is so, President Forrester.
Yeah, President Forrester. And then you have like some like whatever the Prime Earth version of the State Department is, and official, and like they meet their version of themselves on one of the sanctioned Earths, and then they have to like basically deal with like telling themselves to go fuck off and die.
Yeah. But then like the added twist, so like you've got the climate change of temporal anomalies, yeah, and you need the technology to stop that. But we find out that the white spikes were actually engaging in protracted war with whatever other species was happening. And this is, you know, thousands of years in the past now at this point.
Which is now the present because of time travel.
Right, is now the present. So, well, I mean, the white spikes. So this war was going on, and they were actually a very advanced species, and the white spikes are able to detect temporal anomalies. And so because Prime Earth has been doing so much time travel and so much, there's so many anomalies going on, the white spikes are drawn to Prime Earth. Mm-hmm. And President Forrester has to go back in time to find Chris Pratt, the original Forrester, and bring him into the future to fight the other white spikes.
Okay.
Now they're fighting a war far in the future.
Yeah.
And Chris Pratt is like, I already did this once. I didn't think I was going to go to the future again.
That's a good tagline, yeah. Yeah, so. I like how you included the alien menace from the first one. How that's like, that is a serious deficiency of mine. It's going to be slow. There's going to be a lot of politics. It's going to be about dealing with human suffering.
We'll just cut between scenes of Chris Pratt just gunning down aliens, and then cut over to a State Department employee being like, "All right, so you'll see on page 733 of Appendix C, subsection 4." Yeah, that's going to define our relationship right there. That's the one.
That's the article. And, you know, and so because of that, then it says specifically, does not qualify for temporal crisis management offset technologies and subsystems.
This is your own fault, folks.